Could you just introduce yourself to us and kind of say your name and who you are?
Hi, my name is Javon Davis, and I'm Javon Davis.
Thank you. And you're 32 right now, right?
Yes, I am. I'm 32.
Can you just talk a little bit about the initial questioning and the arrest and what it felt like to realize that you were being implicated in this thing?
Actually, I never really knew I was being implicated in it until after it happened, like a couple of days later.
Just before 3 o'clock this morning, shots were fired near the light rail station right next to Target Field.
When I heard that I was even being, my name was coming up in this, I was like, huh, what? And I actually called the officer, his name is DeVoe. And I asked him like, why y'all just came to my house looking for me? And he was like, yeah. And I'm like, what for? And he was like, nothing, just come talk to me. I can't tell you what for, come talk to me.
It was early morning, April 12th, 2014. Two men were shot near Target Field, where the Minnesota Twins play in downtown Minneapolis. Police found them lying near the gates. One would end up paralyzed. Neither of the victims could identify the shooter. Witnesses saw three men, but they had hooded sweatshirts and it was dark. Police started interviewing people and they zeroed in on Javon. Javon was arrested and charged with attempted murder for the benefit of a gang. Hennepin County Attorney Mike Freeman framed the case as a win in the fight against gang violence.
This mindless street violence that continues to go. And it impacts not only the people they shoot, but the public that is exposed to it.
Javon was tried, convicted by a jury, and sentenced to nearly 3 decades in prison. He filed appeals, but Freeman's office fought him every time. And he lost every time. Until he won. In 2020, a judge ruled that Javon had been wrongfully convicted. When Mike Freeman dismissed the complaint, he had to file a piece of paper giving a reason. The reason he gave was, quote, in the interest of justice. He was otherwise silent. But when Javon filed for compensation for his nearly 6 years in prison, Freeman emerged again to fight him. He may not be convicted, Freeman said in his court filings, but he hasn't proven he's innocent. And you know what? The judge said that, too. I'm Emily Havoc, and this is Record of Wrong, a podcast about what it takes to prove you're innocent after you've been proven guilty, whether it's even possible, and how people like Javon carry the burden of their convictions long after they've been freed.
So I never thought that I was really going to go to prison because I was like, I didn't have anything to do with it. They're going to have to see that. I'm like, no, I can't go to prison for something I didn't do. I never knew this was possible until it happened to me.
Javon turned down a plea deal early on before trial. He had an alibi, cell phone records showing his exact location 20 minutes away at the exact moment of the shooting. He said he was headed to Flame Burger with some friends. He thought that had to be enough. He says his defense attorney, Mike Patton, told him the state's case against him was weak. The state's theory of the shooting was that it was part of this ongoing gang warfare between two rival gangs. And Javon's alibi may not have been as strong as his attorney thought it was. The state showed that Javon had listed a different cell phone number as his personal number earlier that year. The state argued that the phone was a gang business phone and was used to construct an alibi. Even so, Javon says he had no thoughts about going to prison until he was minutes away from being found guilty.
So when the jury walks in, it was a juror on my jury that every day he'll come in, he'll look at me, he'll smile, and he'll like...
You know when someone gives you a little nod, just letting you know that they see you? That's what this juror would do every day.
And then the last day on the verdict, he came in and he did not make any eye contact with me. So I looked over at Mike Patton and I said, they're going to find me guilty. He was like, don't be negative. I said, man, the jury that looks at me every day, shakes his head, smiles at me every day, all day, he won't even look at me. And he was like, just be positive. And I tried to be positive for the next 5 minutes, but I know that's the only time I ever knew or felt like I'm about to go to prison.
And he did. Javon Davis was found guilty of 2 counts of attempted murder. His sentence was 28 years.
So every day you got to imagine waking up and you're in jail, going to sleep, you're in jail. You lose family members. You lose everything. You don't get to see your kids. You don't get to see your family. You don't get to live life. So just imagine every day being stuck somewhere for no reason. And so it makes you question everything. Question God, question humans. And then I go through things like with my kids or my family members. And I can't be there to help, or I can't be there to be a father. And I'd be like, I didn't do anything. I should be out there with my kids, birthdays, holidays, school, basketball, soccer, whatever we want to do, however we want to live our life, because I didn't do anything.
Javon has 6 kids. He says the younger ones took it in stride, but things were rocky with his oldest, his 15-year-old daughter. She used to ask him, why didn't you tell who did it?
I had to tell her that on the phone in prison. We had to have this talk, like, I don't know. Yeah, I didn't do it, but I don't know who did it either.
Javon says his daughter responded, then how are you going to get out of jail? So how do you get out of jail if you've been wrongfully convicted? The short answer, as far as we know, is that most people don't get out. We don't know how many wrongfully convicted people are sitting in U.S. prisons, but we know they're there because sometimes they can actually prove it. Retroactive DNA testing has cleared 375 people in the U.S. since 1989. 21 of them were on death row. Researchers can use the number of DNA exonerations and extrapolate from there to guess how many innocent people are in prison right now. Most estimates put the number at between 1 and 5%. With nearly 2.3 million people incarcerated in the U.S., that gives us a low-end estimate of more than 20,000 people, and at the higher end, over 100,000. But they're hard to find, because there's a tendency to not believe a convicted prisoner screaming, "I'm innocent." In fact, the system is set up to make it very, very hard to get out. When we think about the criminal justice system in the U.S., the phrase innocent until proven guilty probably comes to mind. It's the most fundamental right of an accused American. But Julie Jonas, the legal director of the Great North Innocence Project, says once you're convicted, the system flips on its head. And it's not an accident. That's the way it's designed.
The thing that happens is after someone is convicted, instead of the individual liberty being the primary concern of the courts, the finality of the verdict really becomes the primary concern of the courts. And for many reasons, right? I mean, our system would be clogged up if you had to retry cases over and over and over again. And of course, it wouldn't be fair to victims either. So this finality becomes a very, very important thing to the court system. And so many of the constitutional protections that someone enjoys pre-trial, the presumption of innocence, that the state has the burden of proving guilt, right to an attorney, all of those constitutional rights, the defendant who's now in prison and convicted has lost.
So now, if you're an innocent person who's already been convicted, you're guilty until proven innocent. You lose those fundamental rights, and there are a lot of powerful people with motivation to keep you in prison. And as Javon was about to find out, even if you win, sometimes you still lose. In Javon's case, there were some real issues with the trial that the judge who eventually overturned his conviction called critical shortcomings. The judge blamed Javon's defense attorney for 3 key issues, but 2 of them were actually sort of brought on by the prosecution. The judge just said it was the defense attorney's fault for not objecting. Here are the 3 main problems documented in court records over years of appeals. First, there's Kibbe Walker, one of the men who was shot. He told police right after the shooting that he couldn't see who shot him. 2 days later, he told police during an hour-long interview that it was Javon. Then, at the trial, on the stand, he recanted. He said he'd only told police that because he heard it from other people. He maintained that he could not identify his shooter and he didn't want to send an innocent man to prison. But prosecutors wanted to play the video of that police interview with Kibbe Walker for the jury, and Javon's defense attorney did not object. The video was very persuasive, but a judge later ruled the jury never should have seen it. In fact, the video was so out of bounds that the trial judge actually pulled both attorneys aside after the jury saw it and said, "For the record, the video contained, quote, all kinds of things, like leading questions, speculation, conclusions, hearsay." He goes on. "But nothing was objected to, so there was nothing for me to rule on. Okay?" There are a bunch of reasons why a video like this is not allowed in court. The trial judge pointed out a lot of them. Some of it was very emotionally inflammatory. The police said, "They're shooting little kids these days and not giving a crap. I don't want to see your baby with a bullet hole." Also, a lot of what was talked about in the video was hearsay, second or third hand information. The detectives used leading questions, which are not admissible in court. And they tried to make Kibbe Walker think that security footage had captured Javon at the scene, which was a lie. They can lie in a police interview, but they can't lie in court. And finally, police officers are not allowed to say in court whether they believe the suspect committed the crime. That's because the Minnesota Supreme Court has warned that police officers are impressive witnesses whose testimony may have great impact on the jury. But the jury listened to these officers say over and over that they believe Javon was the shooter for about an hour. And there was no opportunity to cross-examine the officers because they didn't take the stand in real life. So not only did Javon's defense attorney not object, he later admitted he hadn't watched the video. He had just read the transcript. The second critical shortcoming in the trial came in when prosecutors asked the judge to let them use evidence of Javon's past bad behavior. Law enforcement suspected Javon was involved in a shooting back in 2010, also involving Kibbe Walker. Walker was shot at near Bede-Makoska. Back then it was called Lake Calhoun. Prosecutors thought this would show motive, that Javon had been targeting Walker. Now, Javon was never convicted in that shooting, so he had never been proven to be involved. But prosecutors told the judge they had three witnesses, so the judge decided to allow it. But at trial, two witnesses did not appear and another had recanted. The prosecution only had a police sergeant and one woman who said she got a glimpse of the shooter, but she didn't identify him until 2 years later when she saw Javon in a photo lineup. When she identified him, police notes indicate that she thought his nose was familiar, but she admitted some of the men in the lineup looked similar. Even though the prosecution had considerably less evidence than they'd promised, Javon's defense attorney did not object. The same judge later said that what the state brought up as evidence was not even close to what they'd promised. Now, I should bring up here that while Javon wasn't convicted of that shooting, he does have a criminal record. His past convictions include assault, drug possession, and interfering with a 911 call. I can tell you that he hasn't had a new conviction on his record since 2014. I'm not trying to paint him as a perfect guy, but as Julie Jonas with the Innocence Project explained, it also doesn't really matter if he's a perfect guy. Julie went on to represent Javon, which we'll get to later.
People serve their time, they pay their debt to society, and then they are rehabilitated. And we can't punish them for crimes they didn't do. It calls the whole system into question, the legitimacy of the system. We don't brand people for life with the scarlet letter. And, you know, we can't. And the system isn't legitimate if we punish people for crimes they didn't do.
Back to Javon's case. We've gone over two of the major issues, and here's the third one. Javon's alibi included the fact that he was with a guy named Justin McGee. McGee was originally charged in the shooting as being one of the three guys in the hooded sweatshirts, but the charges against him were dropped. And then he got on the stand and attacked Javon's alibi, saying Javon was not with him at Flameburger. Javon's defense attorney had two witnesses who were both prepared to testify that McGee told them he was planning to lie about Javon to save himself. Those two women were on the witness list, but they were never called to the stand. The attorney himself later admitted he made a big mistake. Javon started fighting his conviction right after the verdict came down. The appeals process is complicated, but here's a really simplified overview. First, you can make a motion for acquittal or for a new trial. That happens immediately after you're convicted. It's not even technically an appeal, and pretty much everybody does it. It's been described to me as a chance to let the judge throw out the conviction and order a new trial if they saw a glaring problem. If they say no, it's onto the direct appeal at the state court of appeals. After that, you can go to the state Supreme Court. If they say no, you're onto the federal system. That's where you file for a writ of habeas corpus, asking a federal judge to throw out your conviction because your constitutional rights were violated. If they deny you, you can go to the federal court of appeals. For Minnesota, that's the Eighth Circuit. You can file multiple post-conviction petitions to the federal courts, as long as each time you're bringing up a different issue. If those are denied, you can petition the U.S. Supreme Court to review, but the chances of the nation's highest court taking your case are slim. And as Julie said, you lose your right to an attorney soon after you get to prison. but for the first couple stages, you do still have one automatically. Javon's defense attorney filed a motion for acquittal based on two things. One, he said he had new evidence, two witnesses who could refute Justin McGee's testimony. And two, he said the evidence around the Lake Calhoun shooting was not as extensive as what prosecutors had promised. The judge said, no dice. You already knew both of those things during the trial. See, even if someone makes a valid point at this stage of the game, if it's not considered new evidence, it isn't enough to overturn the conviction. The next step was a direct appeal. Generally, for felony convictions, you have 90 days to file this. For this one, you still get an appellate attorney automatically if you can't hire one yourself. Javon was assigned a public appellate defender. She asked for a reversal based on several issues, but she did not bring up an argument of ineffective counsel. The appeal was denied, and the state Supreme Court declined to review it in August of 2016. That was the end of Javon's free legal help.
I tell people, like people I talk to on the phone, it's been, man, like, I don't know what I'm going to do. I don't know what I'm going to do. I was just looking in the mirror every morning, like, I'm going to be here till 2033, sitting in here for something I didn't do.
2033 is when Javon would have been eligible for parole. You'll hear him repeat that number a lot. Javon filed a post-conviction petition pro se. That means without an attorney. He submitted it in September of 2017. The same judge that turned down his direct appeal denied it. He said Javon was essentially repackaging his previous arguments. Javon himself was actually the first person to argue that he'd had an effective counsel, but the judge said it wouldn't fly because he could have brought that up on direct appeal and didn't. Ironically, it was his appellate attorney who didn't bring it up, and a judge would eventually agree that she, too, was ineffective. With these later appeals, you can get denied a lot for technical reasons. It's not always about the merits of your argument.
After that direct appeal is finished, then you really need something new. There's a lot of procedural hurdles that say you can't raise things that were known about at the time of trial or appeal and be successful in post-conviction. You need to develop new evidence.
That's one of the toughest things about the system for someone who's already inside. The point where this gets much harder is the same point where you have less help because you've lost your right to an attorney. When Javon's petition was denied in March of 2018, he had been locked up almost 4 years. He didn't give up, partially because he already had another reason to hope. He had written to the Great North Innocence Project and told them about his case. The Great North Innocence Project in Minnesota is one of several innocence projects around the country, nonprofits that give free legal help to people they believe are wrongfully convicted. It's important to clarify here, innocence projects generally don't take cases where a person says, I shot them, but it was self-defense, or I was there, but I didn't fire the weapon.
And they have a thing where you have to be completely innocent. And I started writing them, and I just tell them, like, man, I fit the criteria. I am innocent, project innocent. Like, that's me. So
at this point, Javon had been telling people he was innocent for years. Nothing had changed. He told his corrections officers every day. He says when he got into arguments with them about petty stuff, like whether he was in the right chair at mealtime, it would strike him again how unnecessary this whole thing was. But no one was really listening.
Every single day, every time, I'd be like, man, I'm only supposed to be in prison. Like, F, I'm only supposed to be in prison. Like, why am I even here arguing with me? You don't even supposed to know me. Me and you don't even supposed to know each other.
One day, Javon was given a pass to see his lawyer. The strange part was he didn't have a lawyer anymore. It turned out to be the Great North Innocence Project. Julie Jonas had gotten his letter and was struck by his case. She had sent two law students to interview him. He had been saying it for years, but in 2 hours with those law students, he said it again. I'm innocent. And this time, something different happened.
They believed in me. They came and visited me. We talked. They looked me in my eyes. We were 100% true with each other. And they believe me, and it's hard to get people to believe in you, especially in the criminal justice world or whatever we go through. It's really hard to get people to believe you. Like, I didn't do this. No matter what you think about me or you think who I am, I'm not that person, and I did not do this. I did not. I didn't have anything to do with it at all, and they believe me.
The Innocence Project took on Javon's case. In November 2018, they filed a second post-conviction petition, They once again made an argument that Javon had ineffective counsel in the trial, but they added that his appellate attorney was ineffective as well for not bringing it up when she had the chance. The same judge was supposed to review this petition. Javon was really getting into the legal process, reading and researching the legal briefs as they flew back and forth, or very slowly crawled back and forth.
So I would get my briefs, I would read them, and then if I had like a question, it's so hard that I can't just pick up and call Julian because we want to talk, or I can ask him the questions we need. So I would have to probably wait like to the next day or something. So that pushed me just to go look for myself. Like, I got an answer. I'm not dumb. I can read, I can understand and comprehend. So that would so push me, and I learned stuff. And yeah, if you're sitting in jail for something you completely didn't, whether you know it or not, you're going to learn it. You're going to read. You're going to want to know what this means. You're going to know what everything means. You're going to know what's happening.
Hennepin County prosecutors continued to fight Javon's appeals. In March and April of 2019, Julie and two other Innocence Project attorneys, Jim Mayer and John Hopeman, presented their case before the judge. Hennepin County prosecutors presented theirs. Then everyone waited. They waited 5 months. And finally, the judge had a heart attack. He went on medical leave in September. The whole case was stalled again. It was reassigned to a new judge in October, but he had a lot of catching up to do. Finally, in December, they had to have another hearing and present their oral arguments again. Then Javon waited again. He had been in prison more than 5 years, and he was looking at nearly 23 more, or 14, until he'd be eligible for parole.
We wasn't going to stop fighting if the decision wasn't that, but I was at dark spots. That's what I can say. I was just at dark spots. 2033 was long. I didn't know if I was going to be there. So that's how frustrating and some dark nights I had there. Like, it was dark. Like, some nights, I even told Julie and Jim, or sometime I remember telling them, I don't know what I'm going to do if this doesn't work. What am I going to do if this doesn't work? And their main thing would be, we're going to keep fighting. We're going to get you out of prison. We know you're innocent. We're going to get you out of prison. And we're not going to stop trying. And they didn't.
It took 3 months for Judge Paul Scoggin to go through the case and come to a decision. There's usually a heads up when a judge plans to issue a ruling, so everyone knew it was likely to be March 2nd, 2020. The ruling Javon was hoping for, the best case scenario, was that the judge would vacate the conviction. That means it's erased, and if prosecutors want to convict him again, they have to start all over with a new trial. That day, Javon and his lawyers were on the phone together waiting. It was about 3:30 in the afternoon, and Javon had to go back to his unit. But Julie told him, call us back at 5. I've got a feeling about this.
I really think this thing might come down today later. I think it still might come down today later. Trust me, I think today might be our day. And I'm like, all right, Julie, I'll call.
Javon went back to the phone at 5, but he didn't call. He just walked back and forth by the phone. He was too nervous. A friend saw him there, pacing.
He comes up to me. Hey, you didn't do anything. You didn't do anything. Your lawyers did exactly what needs to happen. And I remember getting on the phone and calling.
He called at 5:19. His lawyers picked up, but they didn't give him an answer. Instead, they just started reading the judge's brief to him over the phone.
And so I'm clinging on to every word. I'm just listening. Like, my heart is beating so fast. I don't know what she's going to say. She says, therefore, it's vacated. And that's the only word I heard. I just started screaming. And instantly, the whole unit, everybody, all the COs is jumping up like, Davis, are you serious? I'm like, yeah, I think. We're just screaming. We're just so happy and ecstatic. And I just cannot breathe. I just had to keep sitting down. And everybody's around me, even the COs, is like clapping. Or the whole unit is clapping because... you don't see it. You don't see it happen. So they're like, wow.
The judge's ruling was 142 pages long, and it vacated Javon's convictions based on the mistakes his defense attorneys made. The judge said Javon's attorneys were ineffective, and if they hadn't been, the verdict probably would have been different. Prosecutors would have to retry him if they wanted to convict him again. The judge said those three problems we talked about earlier were failures that infected the entire trial, allowing the state to present what proved to be a thin case against Davis, based largely on inadmissible but damaging evidence. Javon's trial attorney, Mike Patton, declined an interview request when I reached out to him. At this point, Javon had spent almost 6 years behind bars, And that whole time, he was telling people he was innocent. He spent one more day in prison after the ruling came down. He said the COs, or corrections officers, kept coming by to talk to him.
And all they kept coming by my room, and Sam was like, Davis, you always said you were innocent. Like, they were just so shocked. Like it's crazy. And so especially all them that I've talked to and, like, had 15, 20 minutes to listen to my story, all them came. I had one CO come in. He wasn't even at work. He was like, I worked today just to see you leave.
Javon says he can only think of two guards who believed him before he won his case. One was at the Hennepin County Jail, where Javon awaited his conviction back in 2015. When he was convicted, the CO got on the intercom and said, I'm sorry to hear that, Davis. Sometimes things don't go right. The other guy was a CO at Stillwater, where Javon spent most of his sentence.
He was like, I read people. I can read people body language and how they talk and how passionate they talk and how they look at me when they talk about it. He's like, you can't hold this on for 5 years, Davis. Not one time when we talked, have you slipped up, and you cannot do this for 5 years. So I don't know your situation, but I believe whatever you're telling me is the truth. But I understand the ones that don't, they hear it every day. You know what I mean? Oh, I'm innocent. Oh, I'm supposed to be in jail. So I understand.
Javon had to wait for prosecutors to respond to the judge's order. They could have decided to try him again, although the data suggests this is uncommon. Instead, on March 18, 2020, Mike Freeman issued a one-sentence filing dismissing the charges. Freeman wrote that the state was dismissing the complaint in the interest of justice. Javon walked out of custody that very day, a free man. But March 18, 2020 wasn't just the day Javon Davis got out of jail. As he describes it, it was the day COVID-19 shut the world down. A wrongful conviction might have been a high-profile news story, but not when a global pandemic was taking over headlines. Here's what Carol Evans' newscast sounded like that night.
Just stay home if you can right now.
We ordered a peacetime emergency.
The governor says that there is more evidence of community spread in Minnesota, but unfortunately, there's also a...
We are in uncharted waters. The sustained changes that are coming in our society have not been seen since World War II.
The Star Tribune still ran a story showing an enthusiastic and grateful Javon Davis getting out of state custody. They reported that Hennepin County Attorney Mike Freeman declined to comment. Javon is still picking up the pieces of his life. Nearly 6 years in prison, from arrest to the day he walked out, is crippling for most of the things in life. It's hard to find work with the pandemic. He's mostly focused on rebuilding his relationships with his kids, being a good dad. He says on top of the really obvious things that prison time took from him, family, relationships, income, there's something that's hard to put your finger on because you don't know exactly what was taken from you. It's more the lack of something. You see what other people accomplished in those 6 years and you wonder what you could have done. Javon defines it as the chance for greatness.
That six-year gap, being able to see what I would have become, whether good, bad, or nothing, I didn't have the opportunity because it was taken from me for nothing. So I didn't even get the opportunity to see what that whole six-year gap, what I would have been at 26. Half of my 20s, I lost for something I didn't do. So, and I didn't get to see how great. They didn't let me be great. They didn't let me get a chance to be great or anything.
Javon told me he's still dreaming big. I asked him what that big dream is.
My biggest dream? Do you want to hear it for real?
Javon wants to start a big community center for kids in Minneapolis.
That's my biggest dream. If I was a millionaire right now, I would spend every quarter right now. If they gave me $1 million, I would give it and to make this possible. I promise that's my biggest dream. And you know what? I'll be there every day. They'll be like, don't he own this thing? I'll be there every day. I'll be there more than the kids. Every day, I'll live there.
In Javon's dream center, there would be all kinds of sports. He says some of the most important relationships in his childhood came through basketball. Javon coached basketball before he went to prison, and as soon as he got out, he started doing it again. He wants to help kids who might be headed down the wrong path. And now that he's working with kids again, he says he wishes Mike Freeman would publicly apologize and let people know he didn't commit the crime he was accused of.
When I went to prison, they sure did let people know that I was some guy that shot people, some gangbanger that shot people and all this and that. So I feel like that's like publicly humiliating someone and apologizing in private. Humiliating me in the public, say sorry publicly.
But it doesn't look like Javon will get that apology anytime soon. See, he's also trying to get financial restitution for his time in prison. There's a Minnesota law that allows wrongfully convicted prisoners to file for compensation. But when he started the process to ask for that compensation, the Hennepin County Attorney's Office fought him on it. I asked Mike Freeman to talk to me about Javon's case, but he declined. So instead, I can tell you what his office argued in court filings. They say they do believe Javon is guilty, that he's not officially exonerated, and they never said he was innocent. They said they only dropped the charges because one of their witnesses has since died and they can't get a hold of the other one, so they don't have the evidence they need to proceed with a new trial. I brought in a former county attorney to help me understand this nuance. Susan Gertner was the Ramsey County attorney, and before that, the assistant county attorney, for a total of 26 years. Ramsey is the county that holds the Minnesota capital city of St. Paul. Now, Gertner didn't comment specifically on this case. I just asked her to talk about the prosecutor's role in these situations.
One thing I think it's important to remember is that if a judge grants a new trial, it's because questions have been raised about whether or not the underlying conviction was valid. That doesn't mean necessarily that a prosecutor is going to believe that the defendant is innocent. There is a big difference in prosecutors' minds and in reality between whether someone did commit a crime and whether a prosecutor can prove it beyond a reasonable doubt.
In fact, we wouldn't want to live in a society where prosecutors don't believe the defendant is guilty, because then they would be trying to send someone to prison who they believed was innocent.
Prosecutor is not the one that holds in his or her mind at the beginning of trial that the defendant is innocent. In fact, that would turn the whole system on its head. Prosecutor has an ethical obligation not to bring charges unless he or she believes that they have proof beyond a reasonable doubt that the defendant committed the crime. So the prosecutor does not start a trial holding in his or her head the presumption that the person's innocent. The jury does. The system does. But the prosecutor does not.
Of course, a prosecutor still has to have proof beyond a reasonable doubt if they want to retry the person once the conviction has been wiped away. But they don't necessarily have to prove guilt all over again to argue that the person should not receive money from the state. It's totally up to the prosecutor to join the person or to oppose them. Freeman is within his rights to do that with Javon. The Minnesota compensation statute gives a few definitions of exonerated. One of them is someone whose conviction was vacated and for whom there's any evidence of factual innocence. Julie Jonas and the Innocence Project helped to bring this law into existence. She says that standard of any evidence at all is intentionally low so that the person can get in the door to get a hearing and prove their innocence to a judge. But Freeman says Javon hasn't brought any new evidence of factual innocence. Javon's petition was denied on February 4th of this year. The same judge who freed him, Paul Scoggin, granted him a hearing. Then, after further review of the case law, he changed his mind. He explained that he was having trouble interpreting the compensation statute. He wrote in his denial that the courts have struggled to establish a clear interpretation of an unclear law. The judge said the way he reads the statute, the conviction has to be vacated based on actual innocence. So Javon's wrongful conviction based on ineffective counsel doesn't cut it. He said that while he did indeed rule in 2020 that Javon's verdict would have been different if he'd had better lawyers, that's not the same as his being innocent. The judge wrote, "The state cannot prove it and the defendant didn't do it are two very different things." Once again, the ruling is this. He may not be convicted anymore, but he hasn't proven he's innocent. And Javon was denied even the chance to have a hearing where he could try to prove it. The judge suggested that the Court of Appeals or the legislature could address the language of the statute and clear it up. I talked to one of the lawmakers who helped write the bill, and he said he believes it is pretty clear that it applies to people like Javon, and he thinks rewriting it again would cause even more confusion. And Javon's attorney, Seth Leventhal, tells me he does not believe the statute is ambiguous. He's appealed the judge's order. So my question after learning about Javon's case was this. If someone's conviction is thrown out, so it's like they were never convicted, aren't they innocent? Isn't that what it means to be innocent until proven guilty? But in fact, in my reporting, I found that being proven innocent is as elusive for most convicted people as it is for Javon. There are a million legal hurdles that can stall the fight for an exoneration, even for an innocent person. And those who do win their freedom can face prosecutors who still believe they're guilty and still have the power to control the outcome. For Javon, that means 6 years gone, no apology, and no compensation. And sometimes, before a person can ever find out if they'll win their case, they're stopped short because they're offered a deal that's simply too good to pass up. Next time on Record of Wrong.
But I don't think they took my life away. I think I go from this day forward.
He served 10 years for a crime that we believe he did. It's appropriate that the judge let him out.
Why did you take it?
Because I've been in prison 10 years. Because my mother's health was slipping and one of the main things I ask God for, please don't let my mother die while I'm in prison.
I would say that most attorneys in Innocence Projects would say, I would like my client to hold out and not take the deal. But having said that, you know, it's not my life.
Yeah, I just think I gave up too much.
This is Record of Wrong, a Care 11 original podcast. Check out recordofwrong.com for more information about the cases we cover. Record of Wrong is reported and produced by me, Emily Havoc, with editor Rita Butero. Original music is by Dave Mailing and me. Dave Mailing also did our mixing and mastering. Original artwork by David Malman. Special thanks to Lauren Olson, Janine Vogelaar, and other Care 11 management and staff for their contributions, and to the people who shared their stories with us.